Tasya havahivam mukta lingasya bhagavata rishavasya yugamaya vasannaya dehahivam jagatim abhimana vasena sankramamanaha kunka vinka kutakandakshina karnatakandeshan yadrachayo pagata kutaka chalo pavana asya kritasva kavala unmara eva mukta murdhajo samvita eva vichachara. As you can repeat, Tasha. Of him, Lord Vrishabhadeva. Hava, as it were, evam, thus, mukta lingasya, who had no identification with the gross and subtle body. Gross and subtle bodies. Should be plural there, with the gross and subtle bodies. Bhagavataha, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rishabhasha, of Lord Rishabhadeva. Yogamaya Vasananaya, by the accomplishment of Yogamaya, for the purpose of the Lord's pastimes. Deha, body. Imam, this. Jagatim, earth. Abhimana Abhasena, with the apparent conception of having a body of material elements. Sankrama manaha, traveling. Kunkavinka kutakan. Kunka, vinka, and kutaka. Dakshina, in South India. Karnatakan, in the province of Karnataka. Deshan, all the countries. Yadrachya, of his own accord. Ubagataha, reached. Kutaka chala, upavanhe, a forest near Kutaka chala. Asha, within the mouth. Krita asmakavalaha, having put a mouthful of stone. Unmada eva, just like a madman. Mukta murdvajaha, having scattered hair. Samvitaha, naked. Eva, just. Vichachara, traveled. So translation. Actually, Lord Rishabhadeva had no material body. But due to Yogamaya, he considered his body material, and therefore, because he played like an ordinary human being, he gave up the mentality of identifying with it. Following this principle, he began to wander all over the world. While traveling, he came to the province of Karnataka in South India and passed through Konka, Vinka, and Kutaka. He had no plan to travel in this way, but he arrived near Kutakachala and entered a forest. There he placed stones within his mouth and began to wander through the forest, naked and with his hair disheveled like a madman. You can repeat. Actually, Lord Rishabhadeva had no material body. But due to Yogamaya, he considered his body material. And therefore, because he played like an ordinary human being, He gave up the mentality of identifying with it.
He gave up the mentality of identifying with it.
Following this principle,
he began to wander all over the world.
While traveling,
he
came to the province of Karnataka
in South India
and passed through Konga, Vinga, and Kutaka.
He had no plan to travel this way,
but he arrived near Kutakachala
and entered a forest there.
He placed stones within his mouth
and began to wander through the forest,
naked with his hair disheveled like a madman.
So there's no purport to this text. So we'll read the next text with its purport, and the purport's rather short. So we'll go read the next two texts.
So I'll just read. Ata samira vega viduta venu vikarshana jato gra davana lastad vanam alelihanaha sahatena tadaha.
While he was wandering about, a wild forest fire began. This fire was caused by the friction of bamboos, which were being blown by the wind. In that fire, the entire forest near Kutakachala and the body of Lord Rishabhadeva were burnt to ashes. So purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Vijay. Such a forest fire can burn the external bodies of animals, but Lord Rishabhadeva was not burned, although he apparently seemed so. Lord Rishabhadeva is the super soul of all living entities within the forest, and his soul is never burned by fire, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Adadyoyam. Souls never burned by fire. Due to Lord Rishabhadeva's presence, all the animals in the forest were also liberated from material encagement. And then finally, text done.
Yasya kilanu charitam upakarnya konka vinka kutakanam rajarhanamu pashiksha kalavadharma ut krishyamane bhavitavyena vimohitaha swadharma patam kutho vayam apahaya kuputa Pakandam asamanjasam nijamanishiha manda sampravarta yishyate.
Shukadeva Goswami continues speaking to Maharaja Parikshit. My dear king, the king of Konka, Vinka, and Kutaka, whose name was Arhat, heard of the activities of Rishabhadeva and imitating Rishabhadeva's principles, introduced a new system of religion, taking advantage of Kali Yuga, the age of sinful activity. King Arhat, being bewildered, gave up the Vedic principles, which are free from risk, and concocted a new system of religion opposed to the Vedas. That was the beginning of the Jain Dharma. Many other so-called religions followed this atheistic system. So, Srila Prabhupada's purport. When Lord Sri Krishna was present on this planet, a person named Pondraka imitated the four-handed Narayan and declared himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He desired to compete with Krishna. Similarly, during the time of Lord Rishabhadeva, the king of Konka and Vinka acted like a Paramahansa and imitated Lord Rishabhadeva. He introduced a system of religion and took advantage of the fallen condition of the people in this age of Kali. It is said in the Vedic literatures that people in this age will be more inclined to accept anyone as the Supreme Lord and accept any religious system opposed to Vedic principles. The people in this age are described as Manda, Sumanda, Matayaha. Generally, they have no spiritual culture and therefore they are very fallen. Due to this, they will accept any religious system. Due to their misfortune, they forget the Vedic principles. Following Vedic principles in this age, they think themselves the Supreme Lord and thus spread the cult of atheism all over this world. So, Om Ganat Timpadanda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshodan Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So, in the Bhagavad Gita, 17th chapter, the question is raised, what is the religion, or what is Dharma, or what are the practices where the religion or the people following the religion are not following, actually I can read this, are not following the Vedic literatures or scriptures. It's a very interesting discussion in the 17th chapter. Actually, it's the first text. Here it is. And Arjuna inquired, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance? And Krishna, of course, answers, the Supreme Personality of God had said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or ignorance. Please hear about this. It sounds like, when you first read it, it sounds like Krishna is not even answering the question. But he is answering the question. I mean, it sounds like Arjuna says, is it goodness, passion, or ignorance? And Krishna says, faith is in goodness, passion, ignorance. But then if you read very carefully, Krishna says, according to the mode that person is in, he develops the faith in goodness, passion, or ignorance. So it's not, Krishna's not answering the question by posing the question in a different way or posing the question as a statement. Krishna's actually saying that according to someone's situation and the modes, one develops a particular religion, goodness, passion, or ignorance. So anyway, so Jainism, let's talk about a little bit about Jainism in general and the historical context for Jainism. We spoke about this before when we were giving our seminar on the history of Indian religion. So at that particular time, it's quite a complex situation. Because nowadays, actually, people praise the Jains for eliminating animal sacrifice. Because in those days, you know, before Jainism was started, animal sacrifice was very, very prominent in India. Of course, nowadays, slaughterhouses are very prominent in India. It's not simply a question of animal sacrifice. Even they have slaughterhouses called Kali slaughterhouses or Govinda's slaughterhouses and things like that. So, but in those days, they were slaughtering animals on the pretext of performing Vedic rituals. I mean, you actually find a very similar thing in the Jewish religion, where right outside the temple in Jerusalem, they actually were selling lambs or goats, you know, lambs or something like that. Yeah, sacrificial lambs. And they were selling them and, you know, changing money. It was just like, I mean, it's like now you go to Vrindavan, because they don't sell goats there, obviously, hope not. They sell garlands you can offer to the deities. Has anyone been, like if you go to the Bunki Bihari temple, which is the most popular temple in Vrindavan, there's actually road signs when you enter in Vrindavan, it says Bunki Bihari temple. You know, 2 kilometers away. And that it's famous because basically there's this story, whether it's true or not, I can't say, that one time the Pujari opened up the altar and the deities were gone because Radha and Krishna were out for the night. And so therefore they only had these like lightning darshans there. They just opened and closed because they're afraid the deities are going to follow one of the devotees out of the temple. Anyway, so so outside of the Bunki Bihari temple, they're selling garlands there for the deities. And outside, even the our ISKCON temple, there's so many garlands at the front gate. You know, you can buy a garland for the deities, and you offer the garland, and the pujari gives you the garland back. Not the same garland, gives you another garland back. It's really, and you know, it's a nice thing. So in Jerusalem, as they had. You buy a lamb or goat, lamb I think it was, yeah, and then you send it, bring it into the temple to be killed, and then they give you some goat or lamb meat to take out with you. So it's a perverted reflection.
And in the name of, you know, in the name of ritual sacrifice. I mean, in the Jewish religion, they developed this whole system of kosher, where there's a particular type of way of killing an animal, draining the blood. I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole thing. But the point is that the Vedic system had degenerated, or not the system itself, but the practitioners, or so-called practitioners, of the Vedic system had degenerated to that extent. That it wasn't simply like it was in the previous ages, that you, the Gomeda or Ashwamedha sacrifice, which in fact are prohibited in Kali Yuga, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it wasn't as it was in the previous ages that you rejuvenate the animal. That was the test of the mantras. They would put the animal into the fire, and then out would come either, I haven't been in one of those, but I assume you'd see the new body or a human body or a liberated body or something come out of the fire. It's not that you'd simply feast on the meat afterwards. Whether it was horse or even a cow, there's Gomeda. There was actually a Gomeda too, Gomeda sacrifice, Ashwamedha Gomeda. Of course, the Puranas do say that that is prohibited in Kali Yuga. So anyway, the so-called practitioners of the Vedic path in the name of chanting mantras, so-called brahmanas, they had degenerated to the point where they were actually doing like the people in Jerusalem. And of course, Jesus Christ overturned the money changers' tables and stopped the whole thing. He said, this is nonsense. And that's why they got angry with him, because he wanted them to become vegetarians. Upadesho vimorkanam prakopayana shante. If you preach to someone, especially to change their diet, they get angry with you. So I stopped doing that a long time ago, because people get angry. Even with vegetarians, if I tell them to eat a simpler, healthier diet, you know, just like, ah. So basically the Sadducees and the Pharisees, that means the priestly class in Jerusalem, they got angry at Jesus Christ. And to a large extent, they were responsible for the killing of Jesus Christ. So in the same way, you have the Vedic system being perverted, and in the name of animal sacrifice, people just eating unlimited quantities of meat, instead of just offering a goat to the goddess Kali once a month and whispering into the goat's ear, Mamsakadati, next life you get a chance to eat me, kill me. They were doing wholesale, you know, slaughter. And so there were two religions formed at that time. One was the Jain religion, the other one was the Buddhist religion, which are very, very similar in many, many concepts. Another reason the Jains and the Buddhists formed, you know, they were actually rebellious groups, rebelling against this animal slaughter, as Prabhupada talks about, and also rebelling against the exclusivity that the brahmanas, or the so-called brahmanas, claim for themselves. You know, that's when the caste system became very extremely prominent. That the brahmanas said, you know, we're the only ones who can perform certain sacrifices. And because they had exclusivity in the modern day and world, that's called monopoly. I'm not talking about the game where you go, go two steps past Park Place or something like that. But monopoly means you have exclusive rights, using that word again, to sell a particular object or a particular service. And so that means you can charge more. If you study economics in university, you know that there's the law of supply and demand. That if the supply is diminished and the demand remains stable, then what happens? Does anyone know? Let's say the supply of something is diminished. The price is right. I mean, it's common sense. So the brahmanas, you know, to keep the price up, they wanted to keep other people out of the brahman business or whatever. So anyway, so for those two reasons, the animal slaughter and meat, and the exploitation of the people, the monopoly exclusivity of the brahman class, really caused people to leave what was being portrayed as the Vedic culture. And there was another group, too, who went to the forest. So there were three groups. There was the Jains, the Buddhists, and then those who went to the forest, Aranyakas. They're called Aranya. Aranya means forest, so Aranyaka means someone who lives in the forest. So these three groups of people, you know, rejected the Vedic culture. And they actually developed, many of them, the Aranyakas actually, they pretty much stayed within the Vedic purview. They just left the whole caste system behind. But the other two just invented their own religion. And because generally, it's interesting, generally because they were in the mode of goodness, I mean, material mode of goodness. We're not talking about Shuddha-sattva. Shuddha-sattva means the spiritual mode of goodness, which is Krishna consciousness. Because generally they were in the mode of goodness, many of the principles they developed were mode of goodness principles. But they were atheistic mode of goodness. Do you understand? And many of the principles we would agree with. Like, here Arhat is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada. Arhat means he who conquers the enemies, or the enemies of the senses, basically. That's why he's called Arhat. And also means he who's a practitioner of spiritual life. So it's interesting how the names are used here. So talking about Jainism here, what they developed, as I mentioned before, is in the mode of goodness, pretty much in the mode of goodness, and we would actually agree with a lot of their principles and practices. And the reason that they developed that is because they were imitating, the Jains in particular, were imitating externally Lord Vrishabhadeva. But they weren't imitating him internally. In other words, they saw his external actions, but didn't understand the internal motivation, reason, or consciousness of Lord Vrishabhadeva. Of course, his internal consciousness was he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness, like it's described here, and he experiencing symptoms of ecstasy. We described these vibhavas in a previous class, the vibhavas. Vibhava, sattvika bhava, vyabhachari bhava, anubhava, stai bhava. So he was experiencing this ecstasy, and he did things to avoid interacting with the material world so he could absorb himself in Krishna consciousness. Like it's mentioned here in the verse, the first verse we read, that he put stones in his mouth. Now, you're not going to go back to Godhead just by putting stones in your mouth. You'd probably break your teeth. Because it'd be hard to eat with stones in your mouth. Might be good. Actually, it might be good at a weight reduction plan. Keep stones in your mouth. Anyway. So the reason he put stones in his mouth is so that there would be no social intercourse, no unnecessary talking, no prajalpa. So there was a reason for that. Not that in and of itself it makes you spiritual, or these material, or walking around naked, or torturing the body. Actually, Krishna, in fact, in the Gita says, he who tortures the body, and he even mentioned the indwelling supersoul, gives pain to the indwelling supersoul, is known as a demon, right? So it's not that by doing these extra, so you see a devotee, I mean, for example, let's say you see the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, giving up sleeping, nidrahara vihara, giving up eating, eating one pat of butter every day or every 2 days or something like that, and you think, I'll become Krishna conscious by doing that. And years ago in the movement, we had devotees who thought like that. I remember there was one devotee who just went on an orange fast for, 3 months or something like that, just eating oranges. He thought, this way I will conquer the senses and become Krishna conscious. And he just became crazy. We actually had to eventually send him away because he became crazy. Like if you do these austerities, you know, externally without the internal consciousness of the Goswamis, at least your heart will become hard. That's what Prabhupada said. Your heart will become hard. So it's not that you become Krishna conscious by austerities. at least, you know, the external austerities. I mean, we had one person who wanted to, who thought, well, it'd be great to stay awake on the codicil and basically not sleep on the codicil, not eat on the codicil, and I'll be Krishna conscious. So that all night, because he did not have so much of a taste for Krishna Katha, he just invested in the stock market. You know, he's just watching the, you know, the ticker tape or something, investing, you know, calling up his broker and checking the computer, you know, how high is AT&T or whatever stocks he was investing in. I think he was doing buying short, which is basically much more speculation than ordinary stock buying, you know, buying short. And then, in other words, he was buying options and things like that. I'm not going to describe what that is. And so he stayed awake. Because it, you know, it's a very passionate activity. If you do something passionate, I mean, obviously you can probably watch a football game all night long. I mean, I fall asleep, but most of you would, you know, you watch a football game or a movie. Like you see in the airplane, when we fly, people are watching movies. They're staying awake for 18 hours or something like that. And I could never do that, isn't it? They're watching, everybody has their own personalized screen on the airplane. So out of passion, But, you know, was he making any spiritual advancement? No. I mean, even there's that story, which I hesitate to repeat, that Prahlad Maharaj became Prahlad Maharaj. You know that story? And Prabhupada never told that story. There's so many stories, like, because one night he was, anyway, he had an argument with his girlfriend in some previous life, and he was so unhappy he didn't sleep or eat for Nrisimha Chaturdasi. You've heard that story? Yeah, I mean, it's all these stories. You know, they're just... It's not that by external things. Because Prabhupada said devotional service is executed with the subtle body. That means with the mind. So by, like Maharaj Ambarish, it says, Savai Manak Krishna Padara Vindiyo. He fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna by using his feet to go to the temple, by using his touch to touch the devotees, you know, and his tongue to eat Krishna prasadam or smell the tulsi, his nose to smell the flowers and tulsi leaves offered to the Supreme Person. But the whole point is the first line in that verse, Savai Manat Krishna Padara Vindiyo. He fixed his mind on Krishna. You understand? That's the point. Fixing the mind. And also we have this verse in the Bhagavatam. Notpadi adyadi ratim shome vikepalam. Dharma swanashtita apum sang. Vishvaksayana katha suyat. Notpadi adyadi ratim shome vikepalam. That even if one does everything perfectly in Krishna consciousness, if he doesn't develop a rati, a taste for hearing Krishna Katha, then it's wasting his time. I mean, obviously he's doing a Gyata Sukriti, but in the sense of the potential for spiritual advancement he could have had, he's wasting his time. So devotional service is executed internally with the subtle body. Of course, it's not that we just execute it with the subtle body. Just, I'm executing my devotional service with my mind right now. The rest of you, you know, you could say, Prabhu, can you serve, you know, help clean the kitchen? Can you help cook? No, I'm serving Krishna in my mind. That's not the point. We serve Krishna externally, but the whole point is to have the mind absorbed in Krishna too. You understand? That's the point of the external activities. Otherwise, shamayi vikevalam. So here we have Maharaj Arhat, who Prabhupada mentions here in the verse. He just imitated externally Rishabhadev. And, you know, the external things are good. Material goodness. I mean, here's some of the things that they do. I did some research on this. They have certain vows. Nonviolence. And, of course, they take that to an extreme. Because they don't understand the point of offering food to Krishna. They won't eat root crops. Why don't they eat root crops? Because you're killing the poor little potato. Which is true. We don't deny that. They'll just take the top of different vegetables. No, carrots, root crops,
stuff like that they won't eat. I mean, obviously they'll take fruit from the trees and everything like that. So, but it's extreme where they wear these masks to keep from breathing in microbes. So, but the principle, you know, we like that principle. You know, these are motive goodness principles. The application, you know, may be a little extreme, but we like the principles, but the internal thing is the important thing. So they're not going to become Krishna conscious by doing this. The next one is truthfulness. We agree with that too. Satya Priya Hitam. And Krishna himself says that. Truthful, pleasing, beneficially. Next one is not stealing. We agree with that too. But first of all, they don't understand that if you're using things not for Krishna's service, you're stealing. Isn't it? Ishavasham idam sarvam yakincha jagadam jagat tenajaktena bunjita magradha kashasvita. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone has a quota, but it's meant to be used for Krishna. And another one is celibacy. And we agree with that too, you know, except in marriage. That's, you know, we also agree. And then the final one is non-possessiveness, which you also agree with. You know, everything belongs to Krishna, but they think, you know, don't possess things. But they don't have a concept of God. It's interesting. So the point I'm making is externally, there's a lot of good things. A lot of good things. And, you know, they were right to reject those so-called followers of the Vedic culture who are killing animals in the name of Vedic culture. And but internally, there's nothing going on. I mean, there's no bhakti. And without bhakti, I mean, the most you can hope for is like impersonal liberation. So, and they also have, there's another thing I wrote down here, is they have certain truths, which we agreed with some of the truths, actually. First of all, they say they have different, as far as ontology is concerned, there's the soul, we agree with that, eternal soul. They have that concept, there's an eternal soul. There's also things that are material, we agree with that because we understand Krishna, Vishnu Shakti Parabrahma Kshetrakya Ketatapara, that Krishna has the material energy and spiritual energy. Of course, they don't understand about the spiritual energy. They just think there's matter and soul. That's it. You understand? They don't understand that there's a Paraprakriti. They just understand the Jiva soul, which is the marginal potency of the Lord. And then there's karma, and we also agree with that. And there's bondage in the material world. These are different truths, their ontology, philosophy. And then stopping karma, and then also becoming detached from this material world. We also agree with that, which helps you burn the karma out. And but really, you can't become detached without becoming attached to something else because the soul is inherently active. And finally, they have this concept of liberation. But the liberation just means getting free of this material world. And there's no concept. I mean, there's different groups that have developed some concepts of what that actually means in a semi-positive step. But there's different branches of the Jain religion, like in any religion. I mean, just like in Judaism, you have the conservative, orthodox, reform. In Christianity, you got the Baptists, the Catholics, the Methodists, the Seventh-day Adventists, right? You got so many people there. Because they're all inventing, or at least most of them are inventing things according to the three modes of material nature. You know, what mode they happen to be in, they come up with particular religious principles. And sometimes, it's not that we disagree with all these principles, we agree with a lot of the Jainist principles. But the ultimate point is that they're atheistic. And Buddhism too. The ultimate point, we agree with a lot of the things that Buddha, you know, Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, you know, that suffering, the material world is suffering, and suffering is caused by greed, avarice, right? Don't we agree with that? And then you give up the avarice, you give up the suffering, and then the way to do that is the
Eightfold Path. That's the Four Noble Truths. And then you have the Eightfold Path, you know, right living. Actually, the Jains have the same thing. Right living, right thinking, you know, right acting, like that. So you know, there's a lot of things that we have in common. But the ultimate goal, the purpose, that's where we differ. That's where we differ, which is the most important thing. Most important thing is, you know, the ultimate goal. You know, what are you doing it for? You know, what is your nature? What happens when you leave the body? I mean, and achieve liberation. So, anyway, so therefore we call it atheistic, and Prabhupada basically refers to it as a Kali Yuga religion. And he says they're very fallen. Due to this, they will accept any religious system. Of course, fortunately, that's in the mode of goodness, and it helps some people. But there's other religious systems that people are accepting. I mean, you got Buddhism, and there's even this one religion coming from Jamaica where they worship Haile Selassie, who was the Ethiopian emperor, as God. Did you ever hear that before? Never heard of that religion. Haile Selassie, I mean, he's dead many, many years ago. That when I was young, he was the emperor or king or something like that of Ethiopia. And so in Jamaica, those are the people, I forget the name of the religion, they smoke. What? Rastafarian. They you know, they have dreadlocks and they smoke marijuana and everything like that as part of their ritual. I know some people would like to be members of that religion. Anyway. Yeah, why should you become a Rastafarian? So you see, that's a mode of ignorance. So they develop some principles, and they actually worship. And then voodoo, I mean, I even have one disciple who's a voodoo queen in New Orleans. And she says on her website, you know, I owe everything to my guru, Vira Krishna Maharaj, you know. So, I mean, it's just modes of nature. When you develop a religion apart from Shastra, it's just the modes of nature, just as Krishna says. Fortunately, the Jains are in the mode of goodness. But there's only about 4 to 5 million Jains in the world. It's actually a very small religion. It's not a lot. We got more Hare Krishnas. We're big and getting bigger. We're taking over. Before you know it.